Hello and welcome to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
My name is Sebastian.
And what a week. What a week it has been. I'm just so over American news right now. And even Brexit. I am done. Yeah. Dunzo with all that. I am moving on. I have almost, like, cancelled my subscriptions to news services because...
Well, I've told you...
I just can't even...
My analysis to all of it, to Brexit, to American politics in general, Trump in specific, and you can only read so many news stories that boil down to that before you're just like, you know what, I'm going to watch a cartoon. I've actually been rewatching all of House.
We like when people do studies. We like... People have discovered a gay thing.
I love that.
One of my favorites was people who walk fast live up to 5 years longer. That was amongst my favorites.
No one has yet to study how true it is that gay people can't sit properly.
There was a few stories about it.
But that was journalists who clearly had a slow news week and had to write something. Luckily, this is not a slow news week for us, so we should probably get started.
Absolutely. Well, the British... oh my gosh, all I can see here is the acronym. Let me guess. The British Board of Film Classification.
Okay.
So those are the people who decide if it's PG-13 or rated R, right, or what have you.
Okay.
These guys did a study that found that nearly all gay kids, lesbians, gay and bi kids... use porn to learn about sexuality. Nearly all of them.
I mean, you're...
We're talking high percentage, 90-ish, I think it was.
Yeah.
And, it was... what I was trying to find was how many people they surveyed, but I can't get that number.
Because if it's 900 people or if it's 9 people, that's going to be a very different kind of
study.
Yeah,
exactly.
We once had to sit through a study where somebody studied 11 of their friends, and we had to point out to them that does not make a study, that just makes a pilot.
Yeah, 11 of your friends is not a study. Yeah. Unless your study is how many of my 11 friends want X.
Yeah.
That's not a sufficient study.
So, I mean, on the one hand, you really should be learning about sex and sexuality in a more formalized environment with a trained professional, because pornography is not real sex. You know, if all you know is bad late night jokes about gay couples, you don't know that it's possible to face each other while having penetrative sex, unless you watch pornography where it's like, I don't know, half of it. So, I mean...
Okay, I found it.
Things like that, like little techniques and positions and how to get what in where, but then they also, they don't do any of the realistic stuff, like, you know, passing wind or sweating or giggling or one of you is a really big sweater and then you have satin sheets for some bizarre reason and then you just slip and fall off the bed. How do you get the mood back when you slip and fall off the bed? There's no guide for that. And having positive reinforcement would be a great thing, except pornography is not real sex. It's this weird staged version.
Yeah. I mean, for example, as you said that, I was looking here and it said that 41% of young people who knew about pornography agreed that watching it made people less respectful of the opposite sex or their sexual partners.
I have met straight men who prefer watching gay porn, gay male porn, because they say it's the only pornography they've ever seen where people are actually invested in each other's well-being. That they look each other in the eye, they smile, they say each other's names, stage names, it's all acting, but still, respectful sex is I've even met lesbians who prefer gay male porn because at least they're respectful.
Mm-hmm.
It's really bizarre. There's something weird going on there.
So they released the whole study.
Okay.
And they commissioned a third-party study. It had 1,142 parents and then their children. Okay. So in total, it was 2,284.
Oh, that's a good number.
Number of parents and teachers, parents and children. And then 36 qualitative interviews of about 2 or 3 hours with the 16 to 18-year-olds. Afterwards.
Okay.
And some of the things that they found out was pretty darn interesting. The majority of people first found pornography by accident. We're talking about over 60% of children 11 to 13 said that their viewing pornography was unintentional. Mm. It was accidental. Google search, autocorrect, dodgy Twitter link. So they surveyed children 11 to 17 across the parents and children 11 to 17, and then they did the interviews with 16 to 18 year olds. The ones under 10 who had accidentally found this pornography, broadly speaking, they were confused, they were grossed out, which you would expect of somebody under 10. That's hardly shocking. But as it gets older, then, you know, it seems to be a bit more purposeful. Two-thirds of teens 14 to 15 had seen porn, and nearly 80% of teens 16 to 17, which weirdly I feel like is underreporting.
Yeah.
I think they were being a bit modest.
Well, some of them may have parents who are tech savvy and know how to lock their computer down.
Well, that was partly why they commissioned the study, was should they make online ratings for online content. But what they found was that some people are going to actual websites, Pornhub, RedTube, the typical X videos, etc. But a whole bunch of teens are finding porn on Snapchat, on Instagram, on Twitter, Reddit.
Yeah.
I'm on Reddit, Twitter, and Instagram, and there are definitely, it doesn't take a genius to find particular content.
Yeah.
On those.
Yeah.
It's a search bar function away. So even though, you know, the pornography websites, I mean, that's an obvious thing, but it's the fact that it's permeated into all of this social media. It's very hard to get away from, and it's hardly surprising that these kids are just stumbling across it.
Mm. Yeah, no, that checks out.
So the real story was that the real reason why it came to us, our attention, is that a lot of teens are using it to learn about sex.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a British study, obviously, but they found that the sex education in the schools was just not informative in any way. So they're turning to...
There's informative in the way that you need, like how to protect yourself from STIs, and then there's informative in the way that you want, like how to negotiate things.
Yeah, for example, one of them said that people felt that sex education was overly focused on the biology and diseases.
Yeah.
And there was nothing about the pleasurable elements. And actually, if you've seen the Netflix show Sex Education, and I think we've watched some of that with you.
Yeah.
That's really what it's all about, you know. And it talks about a lot of the things that people are currently, you know, searching on XTube for the answer.
The Dutch and Swedish public education system have sex education that does incorporate that stuff. And for the longest time, everybody was worried that if you talk about things like masturbation and kink and things like that with 15-year-olds in a classroom setting, they're all going to run out and have sex. And what they actually discovered by looking at the Dutch population in particular, and they did follow-up studies in Sweden and I think Denmark that sort of pseudo-confirmed this. They weren't as involved in the study as the Netherlands was. But they found that the average age of first sexual contact was much younger in the Netherlands than the rest of Europe. But the average age of becoming sexually active was much later. So a lot of them experimented for the first time and they're around like 15, 16, 17. But they didn't become regularly sexually active, even with a partner, until they were around 22. So the age at which they actually became regularly, not just experimenting with like somebody on the weekend or at band camp or something like
that,
but actually having regular sex was much later. If you want to talk about cost versus benefit, like it's worth the investment, because teen pregnancy is a drain on somebody's life, even if they choose to keep it or not. If regardless, like it's a financial burden, it's a life burden. Like there's and it could be a burden that you want, that you enjoy, but it's still a burden, and it's one that can be avoided, and it's worth the investment, is what the Dutch found. So I mean, I have very strong feelings about public education and sex education.
Well, the biggest critique is that public sex education, at least in the UK, does nothing for lesbian, gays, and bi and trans folks.
Yeah.
You know, there's not only, you know, not even the biology sometimes is covered.
Mm-hmm.
And what they found was that there's just not enough there. 46% of the LGBT young people research who were in the study found that watching pornography led them to learn what gender they're attracted to. So it was actually pornography that helped. You know, it wasn't that one time in band camp.
Yeah.
It was actually, you know, stumbling through pornography for just under half.
Yeah.
But the whole point here is, is that pornography is the learning tool yeah. of the day,
yeah.
not the public education system.
So the Canadian radical punk rock director Bruce LaBruce is coming out with a new movie. Did you hear about this?
I think you mentioned it in passing.
So Bruce LaBruce is a Canadian director whose films were banned briefly in Canada. And I actually have it on hard copy. I spent the money to support the guy by buying physical DVDs. And I actually had to order them in from a European company. I couldn't get them on like Amazon.ca or any kind of film.ca sort of thing. But anyway, he exploited the system because if you watch any Canadian cinema, you know that weird sex shows up all the time. So he would submit these scripts of very involved stories that are like, you know, sociopolitical commentary with Marxist undertones looking at the struggle between the classes in a homosexual context or something like that.
Yeah.
And then square bracket, sex scene goes here, close square bracket. What the censors and what actually the National Film Board did not realize is that he was making hardcore gay pornography where the 5 minutes between the scenes had actual content.
Real plot lines.
The real plot line that was so engaging, the sex felt like a distraction. Mm-hmm. And one of his movies, he actually has two cuts, one which is mostly dialogue with brief sex scenes, and the other one, which is mostly sex scenes with brief dialogue. And it's the exact same footage, it's the exact same everything. And the more involved one is the Raspberry Reich, and it was made in 2003, and it kind of predicted the rise of social justice, including some of the more radical elements. And then the other cut is The Revolution Is My Boyfriend, and that's the pornography version. But anyway, he's recently made a film celebrating the 50th anniversary of the original publication of Tom of Finland by making a movie. I don't have it in front of me. This is all by memory. I think it's just called The Gas Stop. And it's about, there's a series of watercolors that Tom of Finland made.
Tom of Finland is a famous homoerotic artist.
And it's he took a whole bunch of these art forms and strung them together. So he also made it so that if there are certain stills within the movie that are perfect replicas of Tom of Finland's artwork.
Oh, cool.
So getting an art, because he is an art house director. Some of his movies are hard to watch because it's very much with like the weird lighting and like tech superimposed and flashing lights and like, you know, voiceover. And it's really, really art house. But getting an art house director to do this was actually a pretty good move. I haven't seen it. It hasn't been released yet, but just Bruce LaBruce, Canadian radical director whose movies were banned in Canada by using NFB funds to make gay pornography.
Well, it makes me think of the International Man, which was a series of magazines around, you know, men in sports. And this was back in the day before you could Google things. You know, before you could find pornography on Snapchat and so on. And anyway, these magazines were really very homoerotic, but ostensibly about speedboats or, you know, athletics.
I've had to explain to people that a lot of gay teenagers use Men's Health magazine.
Or the Sears magazine underwear selection.
Men's Health is a little bit...
It's been more on the nose. Yeah,
because it is unintentionally... It is more unintentionally homoerotic than pro wrestling. Like, it is really unintentionally homoerotic.
Whereas in the International Man was...
It was intentionally. It was
homoerotic under the guise of a magazine.
Of a men's magazine.
Yeah, I mean, the magazine, I think, like, is
do you really need to show all your models with their shirts off if they're reviewing cigars?
I mean, there's a great documentary about that coming out soon. I don't think it's out just yet. We're going to cut to a song break. And we're playing the I Rise by Madonna, but this is Tracy Young's Pride intro remix of it.
Also known as DJ Tracy.
And the reason why I chose this one is because DJ Tracy is now the first woman to win the Best Remix Record Grammy for the non-classical section. So a bit of a...
I find it alarming she hasn't gotten it before, because in the mid-2000s, like, DJ Tracy played Madonna's Wedding and helped bring... circuit music to the mass, like that doo ba doo da doo ba doo da, like that beat. DJ Tracy brought that over from the gay community into the general popular music, and it was her. So I mean, I don't know how this took so long.
Well, this is I Rise, DJ Tracy's Pride remix.
about that we're too young to understand how the government works. We call BS!
Freedom's what you choose to do with what's been done to you. No one can hurt you now unless you want them to. No one can hurt you now unless you love them to. Unless you love them to. Cause I'm rolling through it.
Welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is still Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And I want to talk about Thunder Bay.
You want to talk about Thunder Bay?
Yeah, well, some great news. It's nice sometimes to talk about good news.
Yeah.
Do you think it's nice to talk about good news?
I mean, I'm wearing a cat, so
obviously. You are wearing, it's a blanket with a giant cat face.
Yeah.
Not like you're not physically wearing, like, the skin of a cat. You're wearing a blanket with a
depiction. Well, I mean, I was just going to let the audience use their imagination.
Well, I've described it. This is described audio. So in Thunder Bay, we are broadcast there on CILU. Hello, Thunder Bay audience. But I just waved, actually just waved to the microphone. Real thing that just happened. So Pride Central at Lakehead University is celebrating, I want to say, 25th anniversary.
Oh, well done.
This year, which is a huge deal. Mm-hmm. Actually, Jen, and we have a CD of hers somewhere. I think I have it right here. Outside the Lines. From her band Outside the Lines, with the CD Organized and Lost and title CD Outside the Lines.
Oh, yeah, you've shown me this before.
I did, yeah. And we played one of them. Great band. But it was actually Jen from here that helped to set up Pride Central. So shout outs to Jen, who also has a show or two on CILU.
Or two.
I can't remember. I know she definitely has one. But anyway, so this year, Pride Central and Thunder Bay Pride, who are currently hosting the Fierté Canada Pride Conference in Regina. That's Regina, not Thunder Bay. I got the two mixed up. So Thunder Bay Pride has teamed up with Pride Central. They recently unveiled a rainbow crosswalk. We talked about it a couple of weeks ago.
Okay.
They'd hit their funding targets for it. It may be too snowy currently to paint, but we'll check
in. It's too snowy currently to do a lot of stuff.
Snowy currently. Actually, I met with a friend of mine from Whitehorse.
For those who live in Vancouver, west of the Rockies,
yeah.
Snow is frozen water that falls from the sky.
So I met with a friend of mine from Whitehorse in the Yukon a couple of days ago.
Oh, we don't need to explain snow to them.
No. But she was like, it's -5 and I am frozen. And I'm like, what's the weather like in Whitehorse? And she's like, currently it's like -40 with like billowy snow.
Surface of the moon.
Yeah, but it's like that kind of snow where it's almost like styrofoam. It's dry, powdery stuff. You sweep it. She's like, you turn on your windscreen wipers and all the snow just gets foofed off to the sides.
That sounds lovely.
I know. And she's like, -5 in Ottawa is so damp.
Yes.
You get a chill to the bones and that's it. Game over.
It is unreasonably humid here. I used to live in Japan and I find Ottawa unreasonably humid. Hong Kong, at the height of a heat wave when I was living there, was still less unpleasant than Ottawa.
Because it's a drier heat.
It's so bizarre here.
I feel like sometimes it's like standing inside an oven.
A sauna.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
Because an oven would be a dry heat.
Yeah.
Like Arizona.
Well, that's the difference. Yeah. So anyway, Pride Central, as part of its 25th celebration, what they're doing is they're doing Pride Nights in conjunction with the university's spawning events. So a whole bunch of people, a whole bunch of the various teams will have either like the Pride... I want to say sellotape, but it's not sellotape. Like, it's, well, it's tape. The Pride tape on the hockey sticks.
Okay.
For the hockey teams. Other ones are going to be wearing Pride bracelets. There's going to be a booth at these various events so people can come and talk to the Thunder Pride and the Pride Center to learn a bit more about what they do in the community. And I don't know. For me, I like this story because it's about engaging with the community where the community is. Not the gay community. Just your Joe Schmoes, you know, your Fred and Bob, you know, just everyday folks, you know, in the communities. And this is at Lakehead University, but it's a really great example that the rest of the country can listen to about just getting involved with local sports teams. Yeah. You know, it's nice that the hockey players are putting rainbow tape on their sticks. I feel like they changed their tape a lot, so it's not a huge deal. But that's nice. But I think what I like most is the fact that they're out there in the community. And for Thunder Pride and Pride Central, that's how they wanted to celebrate the anniversary, is by being in the community more, reaching out, building new partnerships.
This is an argument I've had with, well, not really an argument. It's a discussion I've had because people agree, but they don't know what to do about it, with local activists who run various LGBTQ service centers, where the way they're doing outreach right now, they're basically all reaching out to the same approximately 200 highly active people. You know, it's more or less the same 200 people who use all the services, who volunteer at all the events, who attend all the parties and whatnot. And if they really want to outreach to the community, they have to reach out to politically disengaged, politically disinterested people who live in the suburbs.
Yeah.
Who, quite frankly, are too busy with their Italian class to come to your thing. And that should be your target audience, because those are the people who often, when, you know, the whatnot hits the fan and they don't know where to turn, they don't even know you exist.
Well, it's, to quote Kurt Vonnegut, it's when the excrement hits the air conditioning. I think that was a Kurt Vonnegut quote.
I mean, all right.
Anyway, but I get what you're saying. You know, when I was on Pride, you know, on one of the committees, the question was, you know, how do we get the people in the suburbs to come to Pride? And it's like, why isn't Pride going to them? Why are we not celebrating Pride in those communities?
I asked, why aren't we putting ads on the buses? Because if you want to get people who don't engage in Pride usually, you're talking about commuters in the suburbs, and commuters in the suburbs, they're on the bus. And
in the case of Ottawa, the light rail bus replacement service.
But OC Transpo, like, as much as they don't know how to operate a bus or a train or a sidewalk,
they don't operate the sidewalk, so that's just the city.
But they also, anyway, it doesn't matter. It's a running gag that I just occurred to me. I've not established on
with
air.
Me. Yeah, okay. Yeah,
no, with you I have. But the administration of our local mass transit corporation is actually very supportive of the community. They do send representatives to the events, and they're very involved.
There's a bus in the parade.
Yeah. So getting a discount on advertising, because I think they give a not-for-profit discount. So, I mean, like, it shouldn't... Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Actually, this is a really great example. You just reminded me of a story I wasn't going to talk about, but I will. And that was Starbucks, which, you know, is like makes bajillions of dollars. They just won $1 million ad placement on Channel 4 in the UK.
Okay.
And it was a competition for who would win. It's $1 million worth of space on the channel. So ad placements over a certain amount of time, equaling about $1 million. And a whole bunch of people put in bids for different things. But what Starbucks bid was about a young trans boy called James, who keeps, you know, at class attendance gets the old dead name, you know, at the sporting event gets called the old name, and at this thing gets called the old name. It's very demoralizing. Starbucks, what name? James. Coffee for you, James. And it's about that reaffirming, but it just product placement for Starbucks as well at the same time.
I bet you they spelled James wrong. They got the name right, but they spelled it wrong anyway.
James with an extra X in it. Like, I don't know how that
usually happens. When I go to Starbucks, I tell them my name is Rihanna.
I like that.
And it's really, because some people behind the counter, they get it. They just need a name. They don't need your name. They need a name. And then there's other people who are like, that's not your name. And then, yeah, no.
Why? Do you need my birth certificate? What? So actually, funny story. So both me and you are secret Nicholases.
We are, yeah. We're part of a society of gay men secretly called Nicholas.
It's true. My first name is Nicholas, but I go by Luke, my middle name. And your first name is Sebastian, and your middle name is Nicholas.
I also go by middle name.
You go by your middle name, Sebastian.
Because I'm a French-Canadian, so my full baptismal name is José, je sais, Nicolas Sébastien Plante. So normally you just go with the last two.
And that was only the first half. I bring it up because at Starbucks, every time they're like, a name for the cup, please, Luke. And they go, Nick? I'm like, you're not wrong. But also not what I said. So I've just given up at this point. But I bring it up because it was this competition. Starbucks won it. And you're like, is that really fair? But the ad is quite interesting. And what the ad primarily does is raise the issue of the impact of misnaming trans folks, especially young trans folks.
Mm-hmm.
Which kind of brings me to the next story, which was a TELUS story. TELUS has, I think through their foundation or through some of their charitable giving, they have what's the name of it? It's a TELUS original. Oh, it's going to bug me that I can't find the name of their funding thingy.
We'll fix it in post.
Oh, it's this TELUS Story Hive. And what they do is they fund...
Story Hive?
Yeah, I know.
It's a little cringy, isn't it?
They fund people to create content that shares an interesting story.
Okay.
Anyway, but this is actually the filmmaker Laura O'Grady made four mini documentaries. One about a fantastic woman, Karen LaHaye, who came out as trans in Medicine Hat, Alberta.
Okay.
There was also a story about conversion therapy in Lethbridge. And then there's a couple other ones. In Grand Prairie, they talk about the efforts to clean up a desecrated rainbow sidewalk. And I can't remember what the other one is. But it's all... Oh, it's about Fort McMurray. But the whole series is about small-town queer folks.
Okay.
In Canada, Canadian stories. Some of our listeners are in Lethbridge on CIVL. No, on CKXU.
How dare you?
I know, I keep getting them all mixed up. But it's a really interesting series. We'll post it on our social media, this mini-series. But, for me, talking about communities like Thunder Bay and their Pride Nights and, you know, the being trans in Medicine Hat or, you know, tackling conversion therapy in Lethbridge, these are really important stories and they don't always get the airtime.
Yeah. Do you know what does always get the airtime and it's kind of getting boring?
The impeachment?
Toronto.
Oh, Toronto. Actually, before we move on to Toronto, I want to stick to Alberta for just a second. And actually sticking to Alberta and conversion therapy.
Okay.
Because it is a related story. The Alberta College of Psychologists, or the College of Alberta Psychologists is their actual name, have introduced a ban on conversion therapy. Now, apparently, in Alberta, according to the college, no one has complained about errant psychologists prescribing conversion therapy. There isn't an epidemic of conversion therapy in Alberta.
You know, they're having a lull and they're getting some paperwork out of the way before something serious comes along.
You know, the college is saying, you know, it's important, it's symbolic. But what others are saying is, you know, this is actually kind of a bit more than symbolic. You know, the World Health Organization has said, frankly, conversion therapy does not work. It's a waste of your time. It's a waste of your money.
Yeah.
It achieves almost nothing. The only thing it achieves is trauma.
Yeah.
Is a traumatic experience. The CBC did a great piece on it with somebody who had gone through conversion therapy. I think the Globe and Mail has one as well. We'll post the links if I can find them.
I want to see if they're going to start the next fight of no longer forcing young gay boys into speech language pathology so that they don't sound like gay boys anymore.
Yeah.
I had an ex who went through that and he was traumatized by the experience.
Well, it comes up more and more. I think it's Andrew Yang. I think it's Andrew Yang. No, he's the Democrat.
Yeah.
Candidate. No, it's the guy on Saturday Night Live. It's going to come. His name will come to me. But he revealed recently that he went through conversion therapy. Like, it's less common now.
Yeah.
Than it was.
Yeah.
But what this means with the Alberta Psychologist College is that if there is a psychologist in Alberta that is conducting conversion therapy, they could lose their license to practice as a result. So although there isn't a string of complaints, and it is somewhat symbolic as a result of it not really being driven by complaints, the consequences of it are real.
Yeah, it's a harm reduction thing.
Yeah, and what it means is that it sends a very clear message across the province of Alberta and Canada-wide that conversion therapy doesn't work, is not a thing, can be damaging. Being gay is not a mental illness and has not been for 40 years.
Do you know what's really weird? Normally it's Quebec that does this. Normally Quebec does something before the rest of Canada and just judgingly stares at them.
I think Alberta is a bit late to the game on this ban in terms of the province's psychology. Like, I think the Canadian College of, and the Canadian Association, it is broadly banned nationwide, but Alberta, as we know, has been a bit of a holdout on some of these things.
Alberta over the past 15 years has been really hot and cold, where they'll swing they'll do individual acts that make it one of Canada's most progressive provinces, and then they'll do individual acts that makes it one of Canada's most conservative provinces. It is such a fascinating place from a political point of view.
Well, I was talking to a friend of mine who lives in Calgary. He is the station manager at the station there, CJSW. And he was saying that since he's lived there all his life, and in his lifetime, Calgary has tripled in size.
Yes.
And, it is...
You're going to get weird political side effects from that sort of thing, yeah.
It is a massive center of innovation, science, green energy. Alberta, we think oil sands, but Calgary and Edmonton are almost pioneering.
Also, the world's highest population of Sikhs.
Mm. Mm. So anyway, that's another great story. But you brought up Toronto.
Yes.
And for our Toronto listeners, if we have any, they may be sad that we didn't discuss them at the start of the show. But there was
a coup.
AGM.
There was a coup.
And it wasn't really a coup. There was an AGM past week, which has been described by a friend of ours, Susan Gapka, as Animal Farm, the George Orwell book. It was apparently a bit of a spectacle.
Okay.
So for our regular listeners, they may have recalled that the executive director, Olivia Nawama, of Pride Toronto, which is a $3 million organization, the biggest Pride organization in the country, if not one of the biggest LGBT organizations in the country.
It's one of the biggest in the world.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It is absolutely massive.
Yeah.
The executive director, one minute was the executive director, next minute wasn't. 9 days later, there's a tweet just letting us know she's no longer the executive director. Why? When? How? None of that information.
This is where I have to say to our listeners, if you think that qualifies as a coup, please contact us at CanQueer on Twitter and Facebook.
Well, it isn't being considered a coup. The question is, was she fired? And there's a lot of reasons why that could have happened. The membership of Pride Toronto was very much against police participation. The board was elected at that time, very much against police participation. The police were effectively banned. And Olivia Nawama single-handedly reversed that decision and reintroduced the police.
Yeah.
Very shortly after, Pride lands a massive federal grant.
Yeah.
to study a national issue, even though it's a local festival. Mm-hmm. We've raised questions about that for a long time. Mm-hmm. So that raised a lot of questions, and I think half the board lost their seats or resigned following it. Olivia Nuama also got into a bunch of spats over Twitter using the official account of Pride Toronto. Like, there are many occasions where we're scratching our heads thinking, how is this person still the executive director?
Yeah.
But at the other hand, Pride went from the verge of bankruptcy, where it owed something like $500,000 or $700,000, and was edging towards ruin, to this past, the 2019 financials show it making a surplus.
Okay.
Which is a major swing.
How much of this was due to agreements that they probably shouldn't have made?
Well, that was one of, that's, you know, if we're looking at the pro and the con column, you know, we've raised concerns about this national study on the police relationship with the LGBT community.
The study itself, we have no problem with. It's who's doing it.
Why is a local festival doing it raises the question.
Like, shouldn't it just be included in the GSS, like the General Social Survey, or shouldn't Stats Canada be doing it?
Or even if it's done by a nationally operating LGBT charity, such as Egal Canada, Fier to Canada Pride.
You could argue that they would have a bias, that there's a certain answer they want to see. So you could also argue in favor of just one of the political polling companies that generate polls leading up to the elections.
It raised a lot of questions.
There's a million answers, and this is not a good one, is what we're coming to.
There were also questions raised about other grants, other federal grants that have been raised. Something like $2 million in government funding has poured into Pride Toronto. Mm. That's city, provincial, and federal money through various grants and support. Mm-hmm. And then about $1 million in corporate funding. Now, they hemorrhaged corporate funding when they banned the police.
Yeah.
And they, in all defense to Olivia, has managed to recover that position. Mm-hmm. So as a manager organizing, you know, running a charity with a $700,000 deficit into a surplus within about a year, mm-hmm. absolutely astonishing, well done, good job. But the management and the public profile raises a lot of questions.
And some of that money may not, I don't want to say illegitimate in an illegal way, just illegitimate in a way that
raises questions.
Yeah, illegitimate in the sense of, was it consistent with the mission of the organization?
Mm-hmm. So there's these brain scratchers, head scratchers going on. So that the question
you can scratch your brain if you want.
Just, I mean, it'll take a bit of getting to.
Trim your nails first. You don't want to accidentally actually scratch your brain.
Yeah. So the question of, was she fired? Did she resign? Why?
Yeah.
Only did she resign
side. And who's replacing her? And by what means?
They haven't started that process yet. On the did she resign side of the column, there's also some pretty good motivating factors there. A couple of days after they tweet out that Olivia Nuama is no longer the executive director, they issue a statement essentially saying, turns out board may have misused some funds. And I think the Toronto Sun reported that there was something like a $30,000 external investigation into how the board had spent some of its funds. Mm. They're now committing to releasing all of their expenses publicly. And I believe the Sun also reported that two of the board members are currently suspended. So they weren't at the AGM that happened last week. So were they suspended for, you know, mismanagement of funds? Were they suspended over a HR issue? We don't know. We don't know if Olivia resigned out of, we just don't know any of it. So
I think we need a 3-part TV Ontario documentary. Mm-hmm. That's what we need. That's the only way this is going to work, for us to figure out what happened, because there's a lot of moving parts.
It is. And it's very, and this is a big deal, because it is a massive organization. Like I said, $2 million in public money.
And the dysfunctionality of it undermines all pride movements in Canada. Like, the major corporate sponsors, quite frankly, are the banks.
They're about the size of all the rest of them combined.
Well, true, but still.
Maybe slightly smaller.
The The banks are easily the largest corporate sponsors. You get other things like, not Walmart, what is it? Winners and IKEA are pretty good sponsors as well. Mm-hmm. And if they look at Toronto and they say, this is not a worthy investment, will they look and say that the entire Pride movement is not a worthy investment?
Yeah. It is. It raises a lot of questions. There were four people elected to the board. How the other three are still on the board raises questions because there was a small meeting and was there quorum? Wasn't there? Who got the invite? Was it last minute? It's a whole big mess. There was slander thrown around. There was a report. One of the opinion pieces in The Sun suggested that one of the current board members whose term was extended from 1 to 3 was partly involved in organizing a 50,000 event as a joint venture with Glad Day and Pride, which Pride fully paid for. And apparently the event made like no money at all. So it's like, is this what the mismanagement was? But I've been told by a source in Toronto that apparently that whole quote, you know, that whole section in the Toronto Sun was a slander attack. So is it true? Isn't it? Toronto Pride has revealed grand total of zero information.
The Sun knows better than to publish outright lies. It's probably only mostly true. And the bit that isn't true, You're making up in your own mind because they're pretty good at phrasing and making assumptions.
So it's the issue is that Toronto Pride has been, they've been accused of secrecy, and frankly, if the last 5 minutes have done anything, it raises a lot of questions. Are all of the grants reasonable? Where's the $2 million coming from in various sections? Does it make sense? Why was Olivia Nuama no longer there? Did she resign? What pushed her to resign? Was she fired? What pushed them to fire her?
This makes me think of Plato's Republic.
Mm.
In the sense that Socrates, by way of Plato, once argued that the last person that you want in government is someone who wants to be there, because that's how corruption happens, and that society should be run on a lottery, that the Senate should basically be, everybody's name goes into a hat, your name gets pulled out, and your punishment is you have to help run the country for a while. And it's generally thought of as being on paper a good idea, but in reality a terrible idea. Mm-hmm. And looking at Toronto Pride, like, it just, you know, the people who want to be in office are often the last people who should be there. And I think if it's turning into Animal Farm, I don't know why Plato's Republic popped in there, but it did.
Yeah.
It did. Well, we're going to live with it now.
It's a mess. We'll keep an eye on it. Other Pride festivals across the country are I think they've got the popcorn out at this point.
Oh, yes.
We're going to jump to a song. This is Bobby featuring Diamond Rings and Snacks by Kids on TV. And we'll be back just after this.
To feed in the heartbeat, 'cause down 5th and 3rd Street. 2 feet and a heartbeat. Closing down 5th and 3rd Street. Skinny dipping, you always keep me sane when I am tripping. Bikes crash, blood spills, big scabs, hot hills. Nothing compares to the way love kills. Nothing compares to the way love kills.
Hello and welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
My name is Sebastian.
This is more great news. This is good news. And I think this
is... Is it good news or great news? Make up your mind. My God, Luke.
I know. Well, it's funny you say that because I'm going to talk about heaven.
Ooh.
I am going to talk about heaven. The British nightclub, gay nightclub at Charing Cross in London.
Oh, I thought...
Called Heaven.
I thought Heaven was the Dairy Queen peanut butter parfait.
No, we're not. I'm talking about the gay nightclub.
We're not all fat girls.
Yeah. So about 41 years ago, Heaven started operating. They're celebrating their 40th anniversary this year. And there's a few different really good news stories here. They were granted permission to be a wedding venue.
Okay.
Because they're going to have same-sex marriages for their 40th anniversary in the venue.
I'm willing to bet a lot of people met their partner there.
They probably, yeah, right, over 40 years.
In the loo.
Yeah. But the story that I want to talk about is the City Council of Westminster in London. Well, London has many, many boroughs. And the Westminster City Council has granted Heaven asset of community value as a designation. And you're probably thinking, what is asset of community value that this British council has designated and why is it important? And the reason why it's important is because what it means is if that venue is ever put up for sale, the LGBT community has first right of purchase.
Hmm.
So big international condo developers have to wait because the community itself gets the first right to try and save this iconic piece of community space.
Do we have equivalents to that in Canada? Because I know the city council and village council in England is actually quite powerful when it comes to...
Yeah, there's a lot of autonomy there.
To land, especially. Because England being as old as it is, they've come to realize that you are not the owner of your land. You're just some dude who's here for 50 years. One day you'll be dead. Your land belongs to the nation. They have that kind of like long view of history.
Also, Canada has a lot of land.
A lot.
So it's, it's slightly less attached to it than the tiny island of, of Britain.
We monitor a lot less than England does. Yeah. But yeah, I wonder if there's an equivalent like between historic site. Or it's not quite historic site, but it is kind of on the way there.
Well, things can be declared heritage spaces. And I think a lot of that focuses on the building, the physical building.
Yeah.
But I'm not aware of the kind of that community asset idea. You know, if it was a space used by Sikhs, for example, and was declared a community asset, then the local Sikh community would be the first people who could invest and buy in that space. It's a great way of protecting distinct community spaces.
If the greasy condo developer is a Sikh.
But would it be, you know, a Sikh space? And I think it's interesting because we do see in downtown cores, in urban areas, you know, these buildings, these facilities, which have been iconic for decades, be knocked down flat and a condo unit popped up in its place. And, you know, culture is being obliterated as a result of that.
It is, yeah, for sure.
So I think this is a really interesting approach in the UK on that kind of first right to purchase by the specific community.
Fly in Toronto is like a 35-year-old gay club that basically defined unfortunately, I mean, I don't like to admit that Toronto is the center of the universe, but in the 80s and 90s, Toronto was the center of the universe.
In the 80s and 90s, LGBT people had to gravitate to urban centers.
Yeah.
Because that's where there was the critical mass for a degree of acceptance.
The fact that the village is being plowed under for condos is actually... And there's no way to stop it at this point.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's...
I think this is an interesting example of how maybe cities can better protect cultural infrastructure.
Yeah.
Not just the front of the building, which looks nice.
Yeah.
But the reason and the purpose that building is there.
Like Chinatown is a Chinese enclave, and you have Little Italy, which is an Italian enclave. And those cultural spaces allow people to gravitate together and maintain their culture and their language. It's or in the case of the LGBTQ community, sort of maintain their identity and their safety in some cases.
Well, it's something for folks to think about. We're going to be playing out with Walk Away by Weaves. I've been Luke Smith.
And I have been Sebastian. Thank you for listening.